tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Avijja nirodha sankhara nirodho sankhara nirodha vijnana nirodho ti. That was just the abbreviated first part of the dependent origination, which states that from the end, the cessation of delusion, there's that cessation of will, doing, from the cessation of doing, there's a cessation of consciousness. It's a little translation which I'm going to explain today, because the first talk of this 2005 Range Retreat is going to be taking a title which I think Ajahn Mahabua put to one of his talks, or one of his disciples put to his talks. It's just how wisdom can cultivate samadhi, and how our meditation practice is not just willpower, but it is encouraged, it's generated, it's supported by wisdom power. And the whole purpose of the talk today is just to get that wisdom going so that the meditation works. This is the start of our Range Retreat. We've been going for 4 or 5 days already, and so some of you will be getting into it, some of you are getting bored, some are getting frustrated. And this is the time to actually to start understanding what's going on and why. Because when one understands the causes and effects, what's happening, why it's happening, and what to do about it, or rather what not to do about it, then one gets an understanding of this whole path of a meditation retreat, the long retreat, the Range Retreat. One gets a full understanding of what this Range Retreat is and how it works. Then it gives you this sense of standing back and allowing it to happen, to getting out of the driver's seat and just allowing the process to occur. Just to let go and just to allow meditation just to develop, to stop going forward or backward, and then just go inwards instead. And as one learns this beautiful path of meditation, you understand it's not just the path of stillness, it's not just the path of bliss, it's a path out of samsara, out of the perpetual wandering of existence. Stillness is the only way out of wandering. So that I began with this little saying of the Buddha, which is basically meaning just the way that samsara stops. It's just that the big picture of stopping rebirth by overcoming delusion. But it also points to a path of meditation as well. Because it's because of delusion, because of avijja, that we keep doing things, these mental formations. And those mental formations keep these consciousnesses going. The conscious process is supported by this will. And this will is coming from the delusion. And what does this have to do with meditation? The whole purpose of this meditation is to calm the mind, to calm the six consciousnesses. The sight consciousness, the sound consciousness, the smell, the taste, the touch consciousness, and the mind consciousness. If these are looked upon as being monkeys or just running around the forest, if they're looked upon as being my stimuli, like six telephones on the desk, constantly ringing, and you are sort of there just having to take all these calls, one after the other. It's bad enough even during this time of the year, up at tea time, having one phone ringing, sometimes just one after the other. Imagine what it's like with six phones, six different lines, all trying to grab your attention. That's the six consciousnesses, the six senses. And so the whole idea of this meditation is to calm all this down, to actually to learn how to, first of all, turn off the phones and then throw them away. So you can have some peace and quiet for a change. Because whenever those consciousnesses happen, they move the mind, they activate things. And that activation of the mind, the six senses are doing the work. The trembling of the jitta is called suffering. And I think you all know enough about meditation so far. It's to quiet things down, to become still. And you can know that when the meditation starts to happen, these consciousnesses disappear. First of all, the five consciousnesses of sight, smell, taste, those go, the first three which go. You close the eyes, you can't see. There's no smell, no taste, even though there may be some taste of saliva or something left from your tea in the mouth. Soon that disappears. And you're left with these two senses of hearing and feeling in the body. And by using this beautiful technique of, you might call it the halfway house, the bridge, a meditation object. You use this bridge to go from the awareness of feeling and hearing to the awareness when those two things are just completely gone. You've just got the awareness of the mind, the sixth sense. You need some sort of bridge, a meditation object, to actually to take you across from those two sense activity to where they stop, where they cease. And that's why we use like a meditation object like the breath or like loving kindness. But the breath is number one, the best when it comes to the ways of stopping those two consciousnesses. Because the breath is a physical feeling. And it's part of the body touch. That's how one knows it first of all. By focusing completely on the breath, by putting your mindfulness on it, by maintaining the mindfulness on it, you're letting go of all the other feelings and sensations in the body. You're just focusing on one. You're letting go, you're ignoring all the sounds, even the sounds of your inner conversations. You're ignoring them. And because of that, all you have left is the breath. It's the two senses of hearing and feeling are not really turned off completely. It's just almost turned off, just left with the feeling of the breath. And then from there, from that stepping stone, it's easy to turn off the breath and go to where the five senses completely disappear. And the five senses completely disappear. There you're in the realm of the mind. You're on the gateway into jhanas. It's so close from there on in. But why is it so hard for us to watch the breath? Let's go back to the theme of the talk about wisdom, teaching samadhi. If you get a strong foundation of wisdom, then it's very easy to let go of those senses. Sometimes I used to contemplate, why is it that these sounds disturb me? What's going on there? Until you realized it wasn't the sounds disturbing you. I was interested, I wanted to hear those sounds. And I would not let them go. That was attachment. The fact that you can't let the sounds go, that you're always listening to something. If you can't let the thinking go, that is attachment. You can't let the body disappear and all the feelings, that's called attachment. The sign that you've understood and let go of attachment is that you can put these things down, you can separate from them. The sign that these things aren't sticking to you is you can just take them off without any ease and they're just over there and you're completely separated. You don't even know they're there anymore. That's a sign of detachment. So the reason why these things disturb us, the reason why we can't stop thinking, the reason why we can't stop planning, we can't stop remembering, the reason we can't let go of this body, the reason why the sounds disappear, the sounds keep on bothering us, is for that one reason, that we're attached to them. Why are we attached? We use wisdom to find out. The reason why we are attached is because of the illusion of a self. We think that these are mine. that this, we can do something with these things, that they somehow belong to us. We think they're my business. So it's wonderful actually to at least have faith, if you don't understand fully yet, at least have faith in the Buddha's teaching of anatta. The beautiful saying, not me, not mine, not a self. Whatever you see, not me, not mine, not a self. Not my problem, nothing to do with me. Not my business. Whatever you smell and taste, not me, not mine, not a self. Nothing to do with me. Not my problem, not my business. And start doing that with what you hear. Whatever you hear outside, whether it's the crows, whether it's someone banging in the door, whether it's the rain on the roof, or the wind, or an aeroplane travelling overhead. Not me, not mine, not a self. Nothing to do with me. Not my problem. Not my business. If you can actually do that and do it properly, all these sounds, they disappear. You don't hear them anymore. The only reason you hear them because you want to, because you think that you have some investment in knowing what that sound is. You have some interest there. If the interest is taken away, then the sound disappears. It's the same with the feelings in the body. Why is there the ache in the knee, or the itch in the nose, or the pain in the back? Why is that a problem? It's fascinating, having meditated for such a long time and having taught meditation, why it is that sometimes after an hour you can sit and your knees ache afterwards, and later on in the day you can meditate for 5-6 hours and you come out afterwards, there's no aches and pains at all. According to reason, according to logic, the longer you sit, the more you should ache. But it's not that way. So the more restless you are, the more pain you have in this body. The more interested you are in this body, the more you get involved in it, the more pain there is. And you understand that because when you completely let go of this body, when you just abandon it, you're not really concerned about it. It's amazing just how you separate away and you don't feel any pain. And the amazing thing is actually when you come out of samadhi afterwards, just the body just so light, just being at peace inside, not bothering with this body, you usually allow it to relax and it gets really, really healed very easily. So we have to look at this body, not me, not mine, not a self. Not me, not mine, not a self. I still hold that's one of the main reasons why the Buddha taught the body contemplation. To get enough wisdom, enough understanding, to know this body has nothing to do with you, nor its pain and pleasure. Enough so you can disengage. Enough to get into samadhi, into jhanas. So you just let it go. So whenever there's an ache and a pain in the body, not me, not mine, not a self, nothing to do with me, not my business, not my problem. Imagine if you thought like that, if you took that seriously, the whole body starts to just disappear. And this is actually the way that wisdom can teach the meditation. But then again, the biggest problem of us is that we take the mind, the thinking, the mind, the meditation, all these things, we take this to be us. We take this to be our problem, my meditation. I don't know how many of you are concerned with your meditation practice. Can you actually see the alarm bells ringing there? It's my meditation practice. It's my spiritual development. It's my rains retreat. Whenever you see that my there, be careful. And the Buddha said that that's asking for trouble. And of course you do get trouble. So use wisdom to teach samadhi. It's not my meditation. Not me, not mine, not a self. It's nothing to do with me. Not my problem. Not my business. Imagine if you did that with everything. Not just, you know, the stuff in your day, but your meditation as well. What happens there is you really disengage, you let go. When it's not your business, when it's not yours, you leave it alone, you don't interfere, you don't do things, you don't make it move, you don't make it tremble. It's only when you think it's yours, you get involved, you do things. So instead of doing things, we just let it go. And why do we let go? Because instead of Awija, we got the Ouija. We got the knowledge, the wisdom. The wisdom of Anatta. This is not me, not mine, not a self. It's not my problem. Not my business. Nothing to do with me. Then you leave it alone. You don't do things. With the arising of Ouija, then there's the stopping of the sankharas. It's the sankharas which keep you moving, which do things. Sometimes the Buddha called Nibbana Sabbe Sankhara Samatha, the samattering of all the sankharas, calming them all down. But here what the sankharas are really meaning is actually not the resultant things which occur in the mind and the body. What actually causes them? You know, the creator sankharas, the fabricator. And you can actually see that so clearly when you've meditated a long time. It's this will, this doing thing. So when is the arising of wisdom? Well, at least there's a faith in the Buddha's teachings. And you remember, not me, not mine, not a self, not my problem, nothing to do with me, not my business. Then the sankharas cease. Try it. You're sitting there, just cross your legs, close your eyes. Whatever you experience in this moment, not me, not mine, not a self, nothing to do with me, not my business, not my problem. If you could do that, you just completely let go. You press the letting go button because of anatta. It's wisdom creates a samadhi. Now in the wider sense, we started this meditation retreat. I don't know about you, but the few days I've been tired, sometimes the mind just won't get into samadhi. And I've been contemplating, what's going on? Because it's not my problem. Nothing to do with me. Not me, not mine, not a self. It's not very obvious when I just stand back, because you've been working hard. Because I've been just doing so much. There has to be a time when the mind just rests. It's just what it wants to do. It wants to be a bit dull. It wants to be, you know, not getting into the deep meditations. It just happens to do this. That's all it is. It's just like the simile of the stick, which the Buddha said, the stick which is in the water. When it gets out of the water, it takes a while to dry out before it can catch the flame. In that particular simile, I always used to use it as in the world of the sensory desires, but it can also be just the world of the five senses. When you take yourself out of the world of the five senses, it takes a while to dry out. So it can take the flame. So this is, I looked at this last few days as my drying out time, because I have to get involved in the things of the world, because I'm the abbot. But now, so if you're drying out, drying out, drying out, once you understand the cause and effect, then you don't get frustrated, you don't get upset, you don't start to get involved and try and push the process along, or start blaming yourself, or getting into guilt, getting into craving and all this stuff. You just leave it alone, you're just patient, it's just cause and effect, that's all it is. Nothing to do with me, not my problem, not me, not mine, not a self. Just what happens with the five khandhas. So understanding anatta gives me the patience just to allow the process to happen, to allow my mind to dry out from involvement in the world. And it's drying out, and it's great to be able to see just the mind start to get into samadhi again. But I know that the best way of drying out is just to leave it and be patient and not think it so much, not do so much. To be even content with the mind of sloth and torpor. I've been given this teaching a lot in the retreats which I've given overseas and here. When you have sloth and torpor, and you can expect sloth and torpor in the first part of any meditation retreat, especially of a long retreat, you can expect to be sleepy. You can expect to be dull. And the amount of sleepiness and dullness which you experience is a direct result of how heedless you were before this retreat started. The more excited and exuberant you were before this retreat, now you're paying for it with the sloth and torpor. Please remember that, so that when we leave this retreat, the retreat is finished, you're not so exuberant, not so restless, not so jumping up and down. You can be more restrained. But this is just cause and effect, that's all. So that you have to be patient with that sloth and torpor. Because I understand from experience, from knowing the mind, that sloth and torpor, where it comes from, is just the tiredness of the mind. The mind has been working hard, and now it's the time to catch up on its rest. There's not enough energy in the mind. The energy has been going out, being used outside. It's this old paradigm which I teach again and again and again, between the doer and the knower, when all the energy goes into doing, there's not enough left for knowing. And when you stop the doing, the energy starts to flow to the knowing. And the longer you stop the doing, the more the energy goes to the knowing. Knowing, i.e. mindfulness, awareness, brightens up, the energy starts to flow, mindfulness gets strong, sloth and torpor just can't survive, you're mindful, you're energized, you're happy, and the meditation just goes so well, so easily. But you have to wait by not doing anything. This is why the big problem when people are into sloth and torpor, they just keep doing things, they keep fighting, and that just makes more sloth and torpor. And for those of you who are still in the sloth and torpor mode, what are you doing? Stop it. Stop all this thinking, all this planning, all this moving. Don't work your mind so hard. Keep it still. Okay, it's unpleasant if you have sloth and torpor. You haven't got the energy, you got depressed. Depression is a very, very unpleasant state. It's just a low energy state of the mind. As the mind just relaxes, gets still, more still, more still, the energy comes back. It's nature, that's all. Nothing to do with you. It's just a law of mind. So whatever you're doing, be patient. If you're impatient, you just delay the onset of the mindfulness and the energy and the bliss. So your job is just to leave it alone. In fact, this is your whole job of the whole meditation retreat, to leave it alone. Stop getting involved. Stop interfering. Just sit down there on your meditation cushion, in your hut, wherever. Walk on the path and stop doing things. I still love the idea of samsara, the perpetual wandering. And sometimes we wander throughout this whole meditation retreat. We're always wandering off into the future, wandering off into the past, wandering off into the next attainment. Always going somewhere. And you know, you see that's your life, a life of always going somewhere. And now in this meditation retreat, 3 months, you're not going anywhere. Isn't that great? Got nowhere to go. That's why sometimes it gets a bit frightening for some people, because they're not used to just sitting here doing nothing. See, we've got to be going somewhere, we've got to be doing something. Please give me something to achieve. Say, no, no, no. If you have a destination, if you have a goal, it's more samsara, more wandering, more going somewhere. No goals, no destinations, no judging. No trying to get somewhere or be something. Don't try and be an Aryan. Just get rid of all this being and all this idea, and then Aryan happens. So this is what one should remember. Get the wisdom faculty going strong. And then the meditation just takes off. So, if there is that sloth and torpor, just be at peace with it. It just disappears. I've been here for such a long time, I know what goes on. If you follow the instructions, it works. And just like when you go to the dentist, they just say another few minutes and the drilling will be over, and it's true. You have faith with them. You can bear with things. Or like Venerable Chulika's nose, it's getting better now. So you know you can bear with it. Another week or 2 weeks' time, you're back to normal size again. So you know this is going to happen, so that gives you the idea of being patient. But if you want to get it to a smaller size, you try to squash it to make it smaller, you're just going to make it more inflamed, it gets worse. That's why we keep on trying to squash our meditation practice, try and force it, trying to make it happen. And that's the biggest stupidity. You just make it worse. You create more restlessness or more sloth and torpor. You're creating the hindrances. Remember, avijja, paccaya, sankhara, from ignorance, from delusion, we make all this work. And from that work, we create more consciousness, more birth, more doing things, more samsara. We're trying to stop samsara, not make more of it. So when we let go, we don't do anything, we stop controlling, we stop interfering. We just sit there and are very, very patient. Patient, patience, patience, patience. What does patience mean? We just sit here and do nothing. We just wait. To wait, you have to wait in the moment. You can't be waiting in the future. If you're waiting in the future, that's not called waiting. Or you can't wait in the past. You have to wait now. Which means just being now. Just experiencing whatever's happening in this moment without judging, without trying to get rid of it, without interfering with it, leaving it alone. Why can you leave it alone? Because it's not me, not mine, not a self, not my problem, nothing to do with me, not my business. If you can do that, you understand the sutra we're going to say next week, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the five khandhas. That's what the Buddha said about the body, about feeling, about perception, doing, the mental formations and consciousness. He said, not me, not mine, not a self, nothing to do with me, not my business. If it was my business, I could tell it to be like this and like that. Because it's not mine, I can't tell it to do anything. It's like, you know, you are not my business. I'm supposed to be abbot here, but the last thing I'll do is tell you what to do. Because I know I can tell you what to do, but you won't do it. If you were, you know, my slaves, rather than just disciples, if you were my slaves, I could tell you what to do. This is the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta for an abbot. But because I know you are not my slaves, then it's a waste of time, he's saying, oh, please do this, please do that. It's the same way your body is not your slave. Your feelings are not your slave. Your perceptions, your mental formations, your consciousness is not your slave. So stop forcing it. Stop being a dictator. Stop being a control freak. Let it go. Leave it alone. So it's patience. It's compassion. The kindness, the loving kindness, is what I've been calling recently unconditional mindfulness. Unconditional mindfulness means you're aware without doing anything about it, without any desire or ill will, without any wanting, without any judging, without any control. In the same way you have unconditional loving kindness, and the simile is always like a mother loves her child. Doesn't matter if the child shits in its pants, doesn't matter if it cries all night, doesn't matter what it does, a mother will always love it. That would mean unconditional acceptance. So we have unconditional mindfulness, which is very similar. Whatever we're experiencing in this moment, sloth and torpor, restlessness, pain, whatever, we're unconditionally mindful. We're mindful without any strings attached. Detachment. We're mindful just without wanting it to be anything different. Patience. We're mindful, we can just wait. Be content with what we're experiencing. We're mindful unconditionally. Why? Because it's not me, not mine, not a self, not my business, nothing to do with me, not my problem. That's why we can be unconditionally mindful. If you think it is your problem, if you think it is your business, please go back to see what the Buddha said, especially in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. If you don't believe me, because this is not your wisdom maybe, at least have faith in what the Buddha said, because that's what he said very, very clearly. So that means we can leave it alone out of faith, or at least out of wisdom. And that faith and that wisdom is what will generate samadhi. We leave it alone. When we leave it alone, it may be called it contentment. Strange thing, contentment. When I remember that word, it's such a powerful word because I've used it so many times and it's been so effective. You're sitting there in your cave or in your hut, wherever you happen to be, just content, just happen to be here. I don't want jhana, I don't want enlightenment, I don't want anything. Just this is good enough for me. This is good enough, contentment. And I can generate that contentment because of the wisdom. Because I know there's nothing, no me, no self, nothing here, not mine, not my business. So I might as well be content. They've got this old saying in English, like it or lump it. So here I am, in this moment, might as well like it. Lumping it means, you know, you're stuck with it anyway, you might as well like it. And here, I decide to like it, be content with it, allow it to be. Again, it takes patience for contentment to really start to work, because at first, a lot of times I'm content, have to be content with what is usually unpleasant. You know, just sitting there, nothing's happening, boring, tired, aching, pain, whatever. But after a while, if you can be patient with contentment and do it properly, maintain it fully, not doing anything, not trying to get rid of things, not judging anything, allowing it to be full contentment, this is good enough for me, then after a while, the contentment starts to build up steam. Just needs patience, that's all, because this actually works. The non-doing leads to the cessation of so much. It leads especially to the cessation of the tiredness, the cessation of the restlessness. If you're restless, where does it come from? If you're tired, where does it come from? Where do these things arise from? And after a while, you see where they come from. They come from the delusion that you're in charge, therefore you start doing things. Because you start doing things, you stir up the whole thing. You create samsara, the wandering. The wandering mind in this moment, and the wandering mind which goes on from birth to birth, place to place. So here we stop the wandering, we get stillness, simply by allowing just the process to happen. When you start building up contentment, things start to stop. It's just nature. Especially because the energy doesn't go into doing, it just goes into knowing, mindfulness gets stronger and stronger and stronger. Once you get into this, the whole meditation retreat gets so happy. You have energy. You sit down in your wherever, or you walk meditation, you enjoy it. Where does that enjoyment come from? I've contemplated this very often. It comes from the stillness. And once you get into it, once the snowball starts to go downhill, it just picks up momentum. You're off. You're having a great time, a great retreat. And that's where you love to sit long periods of time. That lady who sat 8.5 hours in my last retreat in Ipoh, the reason she could do that, because she was having a great time. You just don't want to stop. You're having a marvellous time. Just like those all-night parties I used to go to when I was a layperson. You never got tired because you're having a great old time. I remember going to see this all-night concert of the Doors and Jefferson Airplane. 2 hours of the Doors, followed by 2 hours of the Airplane, another 2 hours of Doors, another 2 hours of Jefferson Airplane, all night at the Roundhouse in Chalk Farm in London when I was a kid. Never once was I tired. Now if you can sit meditation with that degree of enjoyment, but with a much more wholesome reason for that enjoyment, Then you can understand just how meditation works and how you can sit for long periods of time. It just happens simply because you have fun. And where does that joy come from? From stillness. And where does that stillness come from? From wisdom. Not me, not mine, not a self. Not my problem, not my business. Nothing to do with me. What that means is you let go, you disengage. You stop. Stopping is the source of energy. Energy is the source of happiness. Happiness empowers mindfulness. It gives you the joy, the oomph, the fun of meditation. Once you start getting into this, our monastic life is just the most wonderful thing. And meditation is just such a great thing to spend the time doing. And you start looking forward. Wow, I've got another 2 months, I don't know how many days, 2.5 months left of this. It's going to get better and better and better. Wow. And you really sort of start to buzz with the joy and the happiness of a meditation retreat, a long one. You bliss out. So get the wisdom going. If there's any problem which you have in this meditation retreat, any problem at any time, any moment of the day, don't just try and battle through it with stupidity. Doesn't matter how much willpower you have, doesn't matter how strong you think you are, doesn't matter just how much energy you think you're going to put into this. I'm going to battle through this, I'm going to force myself through this. You'll always lose if you're not coming from a place of wisdom. I mean Buddhist wisdom, selfless wisdom. Not me, not mine, not a self. Not my problem, nothing to do with me. Not my business. Every moment, every experience, every mind state. Not me, not mine, not a self. Not my problem, not my business. Nothing to do with me. Disengage. Completely let go. Contentment, patience, giving up. When you give up in that way, then you find just the energy going into mindfulness, you get great mindfulness, strong mindfulness, and you can see more fully what's going on in your mind. As you see more fully what's going on in the mind, you can see you're still sometimes, you know, surreptitiously, sneakily, you still get involved doing little things here, little things there. You think you're letting go, you think you're not controlling, you think you're being patient. But when you actually, your mindfulness gets stronger, you can see these little sneaky ways you are impatient. The devious ways where you do try and drive this meditation forward. The little hopes which you have, little wanting of attainments. And it's when that mindfulness gets that strong, you can fine-tune the letting go. And this is what it is. The mindfulness gets strong enough, you can see just the little bugs in the system. And you fine-tune those out. You let go even more. And you just watch the breath. It's easy to watch the breath when you've let go. You've got the mindfulness which is strong. That's why that many times when I've taught meditation, the first few days of meditation retreat, I told people just relax, sleep a lot. If you try and watch the breath now, most of you won't be able to do it except with tension and trying too hard. You're doing it the wrong way. You'll be doing it with control from delusion. You relax a little bit and after a while it becomes so easy to watch the breath. When it's easy to watch the breath, you just say, I'm going to watch the breath, and it's just there and you're happy watching the breath. That's a sign the mindfulness is energized sufficiently to watch the breath. If the mindfulness is not energized sufficiently to watch the breath, you're wasting your time trying to take up that object. It's just a struggle and you'll just get frustrated. Get enough mindfulness up so you can watch the breath with ease, with joy. And how do you get that mindfulness up? Just let go, be patient, don't do anything, just sit there. Walk, no expectation, just do it for the sake of doing it. As I said a couple of nights ago, chaga, one of the first ways of letting go, you just give, expecting nothing back in return. No expectations at all. You just doing this as an act of dana, of generosity. I'm going to give myself to this meditation retreat and give completely, expecting nothing back in return. I completely sacrifice everything. Giving 100% means not expecting anything back from what you give. You don't expect to get anything out of this retreat. When you meditate, you don't expect to get anything out of the next meditation. When you breathe in, you don't expect to get any joy, any wisdom, any peace, anything. With that, no expectation. Again, it's the letting go, it's the renouncing, it's not controlling. You know, it's not up to you. Just cause and effect, that's all. Not, doesn't run according to your agenda. So don't have agendas. Just give. Give your whole mind and body to this moment. And so when you do this, the energy gets up, and soon the energy gets strong enough, you can watch the breath with ease. When you start to be able to watch the breath with ease, then that's when the meditation really starts to take off. You're having a great time. You just sit for hours, you walk for hours. You're just so content, so happy just to sit and walk, sit and walk. But as you're doing this, be careful, get the mindfulness strong enough to see where are you controlling, where you're expecting. Sometimes that happens. I've seen that happen to me sometimes. I get really still, you get a nimitta to come up, a little bit of expectation. Here he is, and jhana's going to happen. Ah! I should have known better than that. Only that little bit of expectation stops it. Stops the whole process. Because when you expect something, you're not inspecting. You're not looking into the moment. You're just one step ahead of yourself, which is far too distant from where the action is. Even one step ahead of yourself is far too distant. So you have to just be in this moment. No expectation. You're just watching this moment. And sometimes the powerful mindfulness can see those little subtle controllings, subtle doings, the subtle managings. And that's why the mindfulness has to be incredibly strong, very, very bright. And the sign of that bright mindfulness is the joy, is the happiness. It does get more and more blissful. But that blissful is a sign of how strong the mind is. And then you can just see these subtle little doings. That's why when you get to nimitta stages of meditation, these beautiful lights in the mind, there you've also got sufficient mindfulness usually just to notice just what stops the nimitta developing for a jhana. Where are you getting involved? How are you interfering? So sometimes when I've got a nimitta, I just remember patience. It's not me, not mine, not a self. Look at this incredibly powerful, beautiful nimitta. And say it's not my problem, not my business, nothing to do with me. It's when you start to think those sorts of thoughts, have those sorts of attitudes, the nimitta gets incredibly bright. And it just goes into it where it's supposed to go, develops into the jhanas. You're just letting go. So you see the subtle little bits of doing coming from a little bit more of delusion. So when you have this wisdom, you understand non-self, you understand how it works. And you have the mindfulness, the powerful mindfulness, to actually just to supervise the mind and make sure it is coming from the Buddhist wisdom, not from delusion. All the doing just disappears. All the mental formations, the constructing, the doing, the moving, what makes samsara happen, just becomes so still that consciousnesses start to just fall apart. And the first ones which fall apart are the five senses. You can't see, you can't hear, you can't smell, you can't taste, you can't touch. Your whole body's gone. And you can't hear anything. Sounds might happen outside, you just don't know. The five consciousnesses have ceased for a time because the doing has stopped. And that doing, you can see in the deep meditations, nothing is moving. When nothing moves, it's a sign, a clear sign, obvious, that the Chaitanya has stopped. You're not making things anymore. Because you're not making things, you're not moving, the mind isn't trembling. Nothing is happening. There's stillness there. Absolute stillness. And when stillness lasts longer and longer and longer, it's nature, just the jhanas develop one after the other. It's just nature, nothing to do with you. But as soon as you try and get involved, you stop the whole process. That's why it's called a letting go. So letting go of me, mine and the self. Letting go of all these delusions, attachments, silly things. So when you've done this and you come out afterwards and you look at what happened and why it happened, it gets so obvious what's going on and why this whole process of jhana works and why it's so much bliss. You understand, my goodness, the Buddha was right. There is no self in here. The doer is just cause and effect. You just turn it off if you want to. You know how to turn it off. When you know how to turn it off, at the end of your life you can just turn it off and the whole of samsara finishes once and for all. You know the button to end samsara, what I call the ejector button from rebirth. You're gone. So it's not just for the sake of, you know, wisdom or, so not just for the sake of bliss and interesting experiences, finding out what these jhanas are. The whole path, as well as the effect, it's all part of this understanding about enlightenment, about letting go, nirvana, the ceasing of all things, cessation, stillness, freedom. It's all part of the same thing. It all comes just from having enough faith to begin with, enough right view, enough wisdom as well, to apply that to every moment of your meditation. If you can do that, your meditation will just blossom. So just to summarize, be patient in these first few days of the meditation retreat. Don't expect anything. In fact, don't expect anything any time in this retreat. If you expect something, that's not Dhamma. You're not practicing properly. Don't judge. If you're judging and comparing, that's not Dhamma. If you're trying hard, trying to get somewhere, trying to do something, that's not Dhamma. You're just going the way of the world. It's like a putuchana, striving for this and trying to get that, trying to get more attainments, trying to get a jhana because it's like some scout badge you want to put on your robe, something you want to tell your friends when you get back home. You've promised them, yeah, I'm going to Ajahn Brahm's monastery, I'm going to get jhana. If you're such an idiot if you go back and you haven't, especially if you come a long distance, let's forget about that. That's worldly stuff. Just come here not to get something, come here to disappear, come here to die, come here to vanish. Enjoy the bliss of vanishing. Just the sheer great wisdom of when nothing happens. The whole world just disappears and vanishes. Five external consciousness just cease. It's the bliss of having no body. And not being able to hear anything, not being able to feel anything in the body. Just the sheer ecstasy of this doer just vanishing and not bothering you anymore. This doer is like a tyrant. Like a nagging partner. Nag, 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 nag. That's what your thinking is like. It's always nagging you. So isn't it bliss that this nagging partner has disappeared? Ah, silence at last. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to go anywhere. You get all this energy coming up because of that right attitude. And you're just blissing out, having a wonderful time. So this is what you should be doing. Or rather, doing the non-doing. Just let go. You're on this bus. Sit down, relax, and enjoy the insight service. Don't do things. And then you find the path is very easy. You have a wonderful retreat. Everything happens in its due course. Not because of you, but in spite of you. You get jhanas in spite of all your effort, not because of it. Because now and again, something clicks in there. You just the wisdom comes up and you just stop. Stop going places. Jhana Nibbana is right in this very moment, in this instant, right now. But it's covered with all these layers. And you're never still enough. You never linger long enough in that stillness to allow the jhana and nibbana to unwrap, to allow samsara to unravel. It's always moving too fast, always going somewhere, always interrupting the stillness, always interfering. Just like this wound on a person's body. You're always scratching it, always doing something with it, never allowing it to heal and disappear. So leave it alone. Stop. I've seen these animals, these cats and dogs who have operations, they put these buckets over their head so they can't scratch it. It'd be wonderful if I can put a bucket over your mind to stop you thinking. So you can't scratch this moment anymore. It's great if you had a bucket to do that. Maybe you call it the Dhamma bucket. But I think most people won't put it on. Non-self, not me, not mine, not a self. Nothing to do with me, not my business, not my problem. If you can remember that, the whole retreat will just flow so beautifully. You have a great time and great insights will come. And may that be my gift for you for this Rains retreat. Okay, enough. Sadhu Kalyan 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 Sadh